Earlier today, President Bush ended his White House news conference in the usual way, and then something unusual happened.
Thank you all for your time. I love being here at this new building. Thank you.
This is amazing.
That was ABC White House correspondent Martha Raddatz, who accomplished what few reporters have yet been able to do, get the president to answer one more question. As the president left the lectern, she called on him to respond to the intelligence report that concludes al-Qaeda is now stronger than it's been in years.
There is a perception in the coverage that that al-Qaeda may be as strong today as they were prior to September 11th. That's just simply not the case. I think the report will say, you know, since 2001, not prior to September the 11th, 2001. Secondly, that because of the actions we've taken, al-Qaeda is weaker today than they would have been. They are still a threat. They are still dangerous.
And Martha Raddatz joins us now on the phone from her office here in Washington. Martha, nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you too, Neil.
And were you surprised the president actually returned to answer your question?
Yes, I was, because he really doesn't do that. Maybe it's because I said please.
Or maybe it was a question that he wanted to address.
Well, I almost thought that, Neil, because it was one of those press briefings that we were all so focused on Iraq that no one really asked the obvious question of the day as well. And by the end of the press briefing, I thought, I've got to know what the president is thinking about that. And a lot of my fellow reporters, I think, felt the same way. So we were all very happy he came back to the podium.
Yet he didn't address, it seems to me, the heart of the question, which seems to be that after 6 years of U.S. attacks on al-Qaeda, it's regrouped. It's as strong as it's been since 2001, has safe havens along the Afghan-Pakistan frontier.
I know. It was quite extraordinary, really. And he really didn't address that. And as you know, watching White House briefings, he doesn't always address any of the questions. But, I mean, it's a very, very serious topic. I know he sent Michael Chertoff out on our morning show and the other network morning shows and probably your shows as well there to talk about those reports and downplay, if you will. And what they keep saying is, yes, it's still a threat. It's still a threat. I thought saying we're better off than we would have been had we not gone into Afghanistan was a pretty mild statement about where we are today, that's for sure.
Martha Raddatz, I know you've got to talk to some other people in the news business probably later today. We thank you for your time.
You bet. Thanks, Neil.
Martha Bye-bye. Raddatz, White House correspondent for ABC News. She joined us on the phone from her office here in Washington. The national intelligence estimate president referred to is still classified and still being worked on by U.S. counterterrorism officials, but details have emerged over the past couple of days reflecting concern about an increased threat from al-Qaeda. Secretary of Homeland Security, as just mentioned, Michael Chertoff, created a stir this week when he said he had a gut feeling the U.S. faces an increased risk of attack this summer, though he offered no hard intelligence to back that up. We're going to try to sort out what all of this means. If you have questions about a more active al-Qaeda and what the United States government is doing about it, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A, our terrorism expert, Peter Bergen. His books include Holy War Incorporated and the Osama bin Laden I Know. Nice to see you again, Peter.
Nice to see you.
Also with us, Michael Isikoff, investigative correspondent for Newsweek magazine, author of Hubris, the Inside Story of Spin, Scandal, and the Selling of the Iraq War. And Michael, nice to have you back on the
Good
program
to be with
as
you.
Well. And Michael Isikoff, let me start with you. You talked with several U.S. counterterrorism officials involved in preparing this new threat assessment, and they agreed to talk to you if they were not named. How concerned are they about this new freedom of action that al-Qaeda seems to have?
Concerned, although it's not entirely new. They have been talking pretty much consistently about this for some time. What is new is sort of memorializing it in an official document like the upcoming National Intelligence Estimate. Last year there was a National Intelligence Estimate in September, portions of which were declassified on global threats and terrorism. The conclusions at that point were there was some good news. We had seriously damaged al-Qaeda central, core al-Qaeda, and disrupted its operations. The bad news was that there was this, al-Qaeda had been morphed into a global movement. It metastasized, in large part inflamed by the war in Iraq, which had become a cause celeb. Those were the words used. There were more radical jihadis today than there had been before. They were increasing in number. That was the bad news. Today, nearly a year later, it's almost as though we've got the worst of both worlds. We still have that inflamed radical jihadi movement, which has morphed and is metastasized, and we've got a regrouped and reconstituted al-Qaeda central, core al-Qaeda, that is active, operating with relative impunity along the Afghan-Pakistani border.
And relative impunity, obviously within Afghanistan, the United States has a lot of forces there, a lot of air forces, there are NATO forces in Afghanistan. And when we're talking about this, are we really talking about the tribal areas in Pakistan?
Well, Peter knows this much better than I do, but that is where al-Qaeda leaders are believed to be based, believed to be operating. There's a lot of intelligence showing that they are active. They are active plotting. And accompanying that is this steady barrage of public relations offensive, regular videos, audios. Ayman al-Zawahiri, al-Qaeda's number two, released two just within the last week. And this is a pretty sophisticated public relations offensive, propaganda offensive they've got going.
And Peter Bergen, I guess that's your introduction. Safe haven, is that a fair description of al-Qaeda's operating areas now?
Yeah, you know, terrorist groups need safe havens. There's a lot of discussion about people getting radicalized on the internet. Yes, that happens. But just as it would be completely absurd to suggest we should train the U.S. military on the internet, it turns out to train effective terrorists, you really need to go to a training camp. And one of the reasons the attack in London on July 7, 2005 worked out well for the terrorists is two of them had trained with al-Qaeda, made suicide wills with al-Qaeda's video production arm, which Mike just mentioned. And, you know, there is a lot of evidence of al-Qaeda regrouping. The question is, can they attack the United States? I'm skeptical about that. I don't believe they're al-Qaeda sleeper cells. If they exist, they're so asleep, they're effectively dead. Certainly, they can continue to attack in London, you know, on a yearly basis. They can attack American interests abroad. They're not at the point that they were on September 10th, 2001, for instance. But they are at the point, I believe, if you remember the coal attack in Yemen, where they blew up an American warship, killing 17 American sailors in October 2000, that attack looks very similar to the July 7th, 2005 attack in London, in the sense that it took about a year to plan. It's thousands of miles from their base on the Afghan-Pakistan border. It shows that they can reach out pretty far. And if they are allowed to continue, they'll be able eventually to reach out to the United States.
And is the United States, given the political situation, not just in Afghanistan, but of course regarding Pakistan, able to do much about it?
Well, we've done something about it. But I mean, Pakistan, the problem with Pakistan, I was just there recently, that, you know, you can't really tell if the problem is a lack of will or a lack of capability or both. I mean, Afghan government official, U.S. Military officials tell me that they know that Mullah Omar is living in Quetta, or a major,
the head of Taliban.
The head of the Taliban, a major city in southwestern Pakistan. And for some reason, the Pakistanis are either unwilling or unable or whatever to do anything about it. And I don't see that really changing very significantly. There is an election in Pakistan coming up in the fall. It is likely that Benazir Bhutto, the former female prime minister, will come back and fight in some way. There may be a deal with General Musharraf. Whatever the outcomes are, it's probably going to be business as usual, which is the Pakistani government is going to kind of make some arrests, but sort of have to tolerate the situation in the tribal areas, but basically because of lack of capability.
Lack of capability rather than, we just saw, of course, Islamic extremists in the capital, Islamabad. Obviously, this is a problem for President General Musharraf as well.
Well, indeed. And in fact, I went to that school with the Red Mosque where these and I interviewed the guy who was just being killed, who ran the mosque. And you know, this would be like having David Koresh remaked as a sort of Islamist setting up shop a few blocks from the White House. This was right in the heart of Islamabad with thousands of madrasa students, you know, arresting people arbitrarily. It was something that Musharraf had to deal with, and he has now.
And one more question, and then we go back to Michael Isikoff. We tend to worry about al-Qaeda's strength. It has weaknesses, too. The other side has its own problems.
Well, I think it has four weaknesses. First of all, it has, you know, kills a lot of Muslim civilians, and this has done it. You know, this has been a problem for them in various countries. Even in Iraq now, the al-Qaeda affiliate is actually trying to sort of say, we're not going to kill as many civilians. Also, of course, they don't have a positive vision of the future. We know what they're against, but what are they really for? Also, they don't really have mass support in most countries. It's, you know, al-Qaeda or its affiliates are not like Hezbollah, which will have hospitals and these kinds of things. And the other thing, finally, is that they have created a world of enemies. You know, it's not a winning strategy to say any Muslim who disagrees agrees with us as an enemy. All Shias are enemy, all Jews, all Americans, all Russians, all Indians, the United Nations, international media, etc. So, you know, in the long term, the jihadi terrorist groups have those strategic weaknesses that will do them in.
And Michael Isikoff, as you investigate this national intelligence estimate that's in the process of being prepared, the addressing this situation 6 years after the existence of, I think it was President Bush who said shortly after 9/11 that the United States would not hesitate to attack any country that harbored terrorists. He's now in a problem.
This new formulation at the press conference, which you played before, mm-hmm. that we're better off than we would have been if we had nothing, seems
nothing.
To set a pretty low bar there. And it's about all the administration can say at this point, given that many of the gains that they had been trumpeting for some time now seem to be have been erased. The core problem of Iraq in terms of inflaming the situation, one definite component adding to the overall threat environment is the flow of Iraqis from flow of jihadis from Iraq into Western Europe. We had warnings by the Germans about this. In fact, they are so concerned they've now set up a special task force to track the movement to and from Iraq to Germany. You have a flood of Iraqi refugees into Europe. Very little information about who these people are or where they're coming from. All of this is adding to the picture, and I think is one of the reasons you saw the comments from Chertoff the other day about the sort of gut feeling.
Yeah, and we're talking with Michael Isikoff of Newsweek and also Peter Bergen, author of Holy War Incorporated, about the new problems with al-Qaeda or new assessments of al-Qaeda. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Michael, I did want to ask, as you look at this situation, we had a report just in the past week or so that the United States had planned an assault into Pakistan that started with a few Navy SEALs. And sometimes as this develops, we're going to need people to protect them and people to protect them. It got grew and grew and grew until finally it was vetoed by then Defense Secretary Rumsfeld before going ahead. But that's the difficulty involved in going into a raid into Pakistan, a sovereign nation. And there have been, of course, missile attacks into Pakistan. Those have caused problems, too.
What's so striking about that report is it is so similar to the accounts we got during the September 11th commission about the debates within the Clinton administration about striking at bin Laden, where you had intel people saying, we've got some good information, the military gets brought in, the plan gets too big and too unwieldy, and then at the last minute it gets turned off. There were a lot of people who were very critical at the time for the Clinton administration for not taking stronger action, taking those actions. Here we have it repeated again under Bush.
Michael Isikoff, BlackBerry, somebody calling, but telling me he's on the radio. Let's see if we can get a caller on the line. This is Mike. Mike calling us from Anchorage in Alaska.
Yeah, I just kind of want to echo a little of what you said and the show you did further back about Pakistan. If we've committed to this war on terror, why aren't we holding the government and Bush accountable for going after where the real terrorists are? We've wasted a huge amount of time and resources in Iraq that, by all accounts, has really just made things worse, when in fact the terrorists and the governments that are complicit with the terrorists are still in Pakistan and Afghanistan. We may have a puppet regime in Afghanistan that is pretending to be on our side and doing what we want, but Pakistan is clearly either incapable or simply laughing at us when we say we want to address the issues with al-Qaeda there. And I'm wondering where it is that the opinions or the pressure is going to be put on the government to do what we really said we were going to get out there and do.
Now,
my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Peter Bergen, you said lack of capability on Pakistan's part. Clearly, at least with some elements of the Pakistani intelligence services, Pakistani military, and of course, considerable numbers of its people, too, they support the Taliban.
Yeah, well, they haven't taken the Taliban option off the table for their own strategic reasons. In the Pakistan's defense, General Musharraf has survived two very serious assassination attempts by al-Qaeda. They have arrested major al-Qaeda leaders. So it's kind of this schizophrenic thing where they do some things and they don't do others. But, I mean, if you do the thought experiment where Iran was the headquarters of al-Qaeda and Iran was the headquarters of the Taliban and Iran was proliferating nuclear weapons to all sorts of rogue regimes, obviously you know what the answer would be in terms of what were you doing with Iran. And, of course, it's not Iran, it's Pakistan.
Pakistan, though, is vital to the pursuit of the American agenda in Afghanistan. You've got to get to Afghanistan from somewhere.
Yeah. And, of course, Pakistan is going to have 200 million people. It's going to be the fifth largest country in the world. It's got nuclear weapons. It's not something, you know, going back to what Mike said, you know, there are some sort of strategic things you have to think about pretty carefully. If you don't necessarily want to provoke, you know, the entire Pakistani population, which is almost 10 times larger than the Afghan population. It's a very different strategic question.
And, Mike, as you talk to officials in the Bush administration and outsiders as well, do they see any solution to this?
Well, they certainly repeat the same sort of rhetoric, the same sort of talking points that we've been hearing for some time about keeping the pressure on and drawing that stark line. But when you penetrate beyond that, I think there is definitely this sort of feeling of weariness and resignation almost about a problem that's looking far more intractable today than it did, say, 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Yeah, well, it continues. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Peter Bergen, a senior fellow at the New America Foundation. His most recent book is The Osama Bin Laden I Know. Michael Isikoff, an investigative correspondent for Newsweek, co-author of Hubris, The Inside Story of Spin, Scandal, and the Selling of the Iraq War. And they were kind enough to join us today here in Studio 3A. Ira Flato will be here tomorrow. We'll see you on Monday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.